This is Canadian Wealth Wisdom by Tridel to Private Wealth. My name is Kyle Taylor, and I am joined by Asher Tward, Head of Estate Planning with Tridel to Private Wealth. Asher is one of the founding members of Tridelta and a leader in the Canadian estate planning industry. Asher continues to provide his expertise and advice to a wide range of clients in the areas of insurance, trust, corporate planning, and estate solutions. Welcome, Asher.
Thanks, Kyle. It's great to be here, and thanks for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, excited for the conversation. The purpose of this conversation is to discuss the importance of insurance within a corporation and why business owners should consider it if such a strategy is right for them. We want to emphasize that there can often be very significant differences in the needs and goals of one person relative to another. So we will focus on general information and be sure to point out when discussing a specific scenario. We always recommend speaking to a licensed insurance professional to determine what strategy best fits your situation. So with that in mind, a good first question to ask is why incorporated business owners should consider using insurance.
Yeah, it's a great question, Kyle, because most business owners aren't really aware of how using life insurance inside a corporation can help them and give them distinct advantages. So let me address a few key characteristics. Life insurance in Canada is an exempt vehicle. So what that means is that any money that goes into a life insurance policy within certain limits that are very generous will grow tax exempt. The death benefit of a life insurance policy is fully tax free. There is one additional tax benefit of corporate life insurance, which again, most people aren't aware of, which makes it extremely powerful and something that pretty much all business owners should consider. And that is that the death benefit of a life insurance policy, less the cost base, credits the capital dividend account of a corporation. And what that really means is that a very good chunk, in most cases, the entire death benefit of a life insurance policy that comes into a corporation tax-free can be pulled out of the corporation fully tax-free by the shareholders. Now, I would mention that there really aren't many other vehicles in Canada that allow for this. So insurance, if properly structured within a corporation, gives one the ability to do this over time. Now, the capital dividend is available for people that invest in capital property. That might be real estate or equities. When you realize a capital gain in Canada, a portion of that capital gain, the non-taxable portion in a corporation, will credit the capital dividend account. But as we do this interview, we are pretty much on the eve of a change in the capital gains inclusion rate. Within a corporation, that inclusion rate will go from 50% to 66 2/3%. And what that means is that 2/3 of all capital gains generated within a corporation will be taxable. And the general corporate rate on passive income is 50%. Versus the 50% inclusion it currently is. Now, the implication of that isn't just that you're going to pay higher taxes on your capital gains, but the non-taxable portion of your capital gain, which is 33.33%, is actually lower than it was where it used to be 50%. And what that means is the capital dividend credit you get from gains on capital property is significantly lower going forward. So the implication of this for someone who's considering insurance planning is that insurance just became a significantly better choice for long-term planning. That is a major tax consideration that people need to be educated on, and that is the biggest motive for someone to consider insurance planning within a corporation. Next, I'll tackle asset allocation. So when one looks at life insurance as an asset, because you're putting money into something that will generate a future benefit, that that needs to be considered an investment. Now, it isn't quite the same as an investment like buying shares of a stock or a bond or buying a GIC or investing in a property. All of these various investments have different types of liquidity. Insurance also comes with some liquidity. Most insurance policies maintain a cash surrender value, so you can access cash values while you're alive. You can borrow against life insurance policies. But generally speaking, when we put together a detailed financial plan that includes insurance for a corporation, the money that is committed to an insurance policy is generally money that will never be needed. And that money is then used to develop an estate planning strategy. So from an asset allocation perspective, it makes sense to have a portion of one's assets in insurance. Now, there's a secondary benefit to doing this, and that is that all the dollars that go into a life insurance policy are exempt. So whereas if you have retained earnings of $1 million and they're all sitting in stock, all of those shares are ultimately taxable. The portion of the funds that go into insurance never face taxation again in the future. And therefore, you're cutting down your annual taxability as well as your future taxation because, as I mentioned before, you are allowing for a larger credit to the capital dividend account down the road, which will allow you to access more of those retained earnings down the road.
So that's a lot of really great information, and we'll certainly go a little bit deeper into each of your points. But one of the questions I really want to ask is, should all business owners consider using insurance, or does it depend on the, let's say, dollar amount of retained earnings within a corporation, the size of the business, the amount of employees? Is there any consideration there?
Sure. I mean, I'll preface my answer by saying that all business owners who would consider insurance should first have a very detailed financial plan. And that means that they should have a good understanding of where they sit today, and predicated on certain assumptions of future growth and future income and retirement timelines, we would then be able to generate a baseline plan that will indicate what the corporate picture looks like, not just now, but in the future. With that in mind, the more specific answer to your question is that insurance in most cases can be considered as a planning solution. And the dollar amount or what we do with respect to insurance planning isn't necessarily related to the amount of retained earnings you might have today, but these solutions are long-term solutions. So we would look at future projections, future income and growth to analyze what we might need both now and in the future.
And you already mentioned in your first response about the capital dividend account and how that's a means of getting money out of a corporation tax efficiently. Are there any other solutions that are accessible to Canadians today to get money out of the corporation tax efficiently?
So, you know, there's numerous ways to get money out of a corporation. You can pay yourself a salary or others, although the TOSI rules, the tax on split income rules, have become more stringent in the last 8 years or so. So it's harder to pass income to relatives than it used to be. You can pull money via dividends, and those dividends can go basically to various people that own shares of the corporation. And there's a lot of different corporate structuring you can do to enable different types of shareholders. Now, at the highest marginal rate, the effective taxation on a dividend, on a non-eligible dividend from a corporation is almost 48%. So just bear that in mind, that there's no free lunch. You can get money out of a corporation by borrowing it, and you can borrow money from your own corporation at the prescribed rate that CRA posts quarterly. The current prescribed rate's about 6%. Now, that probably will come down it was as low as 1% a few years ago, and doing corporate loans was attractive in certain cases. You are essentially paying yourself or paying the corporation as an individual that interest payment. So really, you know, it's adverse in that you're putting money into the corp, the interest payment, versus taking money out. But the real adverse aspect of it is that you're paying tax. The corporation's paying tax on that interest payment. Now, when it's 1%, it's no big deal. But when it's 6%, it's considerable because you're giving the government 3% of that money. And so borrowing from your corporation with a prescribed loan is not the best solution, but it's not a bad short-term solution for people that need short-term capital and they have a lot of money tied up in their corporation. The other method of getting money out of your corporation is via the capital dividend account that I mentioned earlier. And the ways to do that, really the two ways to do that, would be the non-taxable portion of capital gains generated within a corporation. And that would be a third of all capital gains generated. Or life insurance death benefits less the cost base. And just a comment on the cost base of a life insurance policy. If we do proper planning enough years out, generally that cost base will drop to zero. So what that effectively means is that the entire death benefit in most cases with proper planning would be 100% credited to the capital dividend account. So as you could see going through the list, the most attractive option for getting money out of a corporation is life insurance. Now, the catch is that someone has to die for that capital dividend credit to be created.
So to help demonstrate the importance and impact that life insurance can have on a real life scenario, I wanted to borrow from a scenario that we actually have up on our website. This example has clients, Michael and Emily, who are both age 60, four adult kids, no debt, own a home and cottage worth in total almost $3 million, have $4 million in liquid personal investments and $2 million inside of their holding company, which used to be a professional company. Now, they spend about $120,000 annually. Let's assume they earn 5.5% on their investments. Like many Canadians, they collect CPP and wish to protect their OAS as much as possible in retirement. Between personally owned investment accounts, their RSP, TFSA, etc., and corporate dividends, they have little need for most of the retained earnings in their corporation. Now, Asher, I wanted to ask you, what does this couple's situation look like without an insurance plan or a component having insurance? And what was your proposal for them?
Sure. So if we project out to year 30, which takes them to age 90, the total estate value, having run a planning scenario, would be about $13.3 million. The lifetime taxation that they would face collectively, you know, that adds up all of the annual taxation plus the final taxation, is roughly $3 million. The non-registered plus TFSA assets would be $5.5 million. And the remaining RIF at age 90 would still be $1.35 million. Now, that is a hefty estate to leave, and it's a lot of taxes paid. So when we look at a situation like this, we would want to see how we can improve things by, you know, bringing some solutions into the mix. And effectively, that is the core of how we help our clients. Now, if we introduce an insurance plan, just as an example, in this particular case, we would introduce, say, a $2 million joint last-to-die par whole life insurance policy. And what this means is that when both of them have passed away, the policy would pay out $2 million. We would implement an estate freeze and establish their adult children as shareholders going forward, because we've already figured out that they need very little of the capital within the corporation, but they will pull some dividends. But again, we want to preserve as much OAS as possible. So we don't want their income to be too high, but we want them to be able to cover their expenses and spend through their non-registered assets. So if we do this and run the same projections to year 30, instead of having an estate of $13.3 million just by purchasing this $2 million insurance policy within the corporation, the total estate value is $15.4 $3 million. The lifetime taxation, despite the fact the estate value is over $2 million more, is less, $2.84 million. So their lifetime taxation's gone down, but their estate's gone up by over $2 million. Now, their non-registered and TFSA assets at the end of 30 years is still $4.4 million. Versus $5.5 million. So that means that if we were wrong and their rate of return was lower than 5.5% or they spent more money, they would have this existing pool, which is more than ample to cover off any deviations in the plan. Obviously, the RIF would be the same in both scenarios. Now, just to reiterate, the additional estate value is 16% more just by incorporating a life insurance policy. And that would be $2.13 million in additional estate value. Their retained earnings, they would still have some retained earnings after paying out $1.37 million in dividends over 30 years. Now, that's important because the goal is to get the money out of the corporation as tax efficiently as possible. And by introducing the insurance plan, we've been able to do that because we've been able to get pretty much $2 million out of the corporation tax-free while still paying $1.37 million in dividends over 30 years.
So I think that's a really great overview and really demonstrates the impact of having a plan. One of the questions that we often get from clients, and I want to raise it to you, is you mentioned using a joint last-to-die whole life insurance policy. Is there any difference or any considerations people make or people in your shoes make when deciding between a whole life versus a universal life insurance policy?
Sure. So, I mean, universal life is whole life, but it's unbundled. So what that means is that with a whole life policy, it will cost more, but for that additional amount you're paying, you're getting more upside, which means that the policy will grow every year. And so we start with a $2 million policy, but over time, that $2 million policy grows significantly. And that is one of the benefits of whole life, where you're putting the trust and faith in the growth of that additional capital in the insurance company's hands, and they manage that money very similar to a pension fund manager. The long-term returns for all insurers in Canada are available. There's very little variance from year to year. Returns are very consistent. They tend to move with conventional rates. However, we've noticed that the dividend rates that are paid out by the insurers in Canada have bottomed in the last 2 to 3 years with the rates in Canada, and now are on the upswing. So now is probably the best time in history to buy whole life because of the fact that there's very little downside, because rates have, for the most part, hit their all-time bottoms. They're not going to go lower than where they were. Whereas with a universal life policy, you can buy, say, $1 million, pay the minimum premium. That million stays the same in perpetuity. But by doing that, you don't really get any inflation protection. Whereas whole life will go up in value every year and more than pace inflation, a UL policy generally will not, unless you overfund it. Now, if you overfund it, you're right back in terms of the same dollar amount going into your whole life policy. But with a universal life policy, you get to decide how that money's invested. And for many people, they don't want to have to make that decision. They're already looking after a significant portfolio, and they want this part just to kind of be on autopilot.
That's really great information. Maybe going back to This couple, Michael and Emily, I have a couple follow-up questions on the scenario here. Is it fair to consider insurance as a separate asset class in this scenario? I mean, they have a lot of liquid investments. Is this a means of diversifying? How do you look at it?
Absolutely. Because insurance has an inherent internal rate of return, that means you put dollars in and you get dollars out. Now, because of that, we would then look at what is the effective, and we do this analysis all the time for clients. We would look at, here's the dollars in, and here's what we anticipate you'll get out at any given year. And when we do this planning, we go out way past life expectancy. So these plans have to work well into your 90s, 95, whatever the age may be. These plans have to work. They can't just work if you pass away at 80. That isn't proper planning. So obviously that's longevity planning is a given. But it makes sense to diversify as an asset class because as one ages, they tend to want to take significantly less risk, even those with significantly large assets that they know they're going to pass on. A lot of people lose the stomach for risk. By using insurance, you're taking risk off the table pretty much. And you're creating an asset class that's almost like a zero coupon bond. So you're putting money in at the beginning, and then down the road, you get your capital back plus the growth. The difference is, in the case of life insurance, is that zero coupon bond is completely tax-free. So one could look at life insurance like a zero coupon bond.
And I'm really glad you brought up longevity. And of course, we know Canadians are living longer and longer. And you mentioned that the life expectancy in this scenario was them living to age 90. Now, not everybody's guaranteed to live to 90 plus. Does it still make sense if they pass away younger? Is there a break-even age that they have to live to make it make sense?
Yeah, and in fact, it's quite the opposite. The earlier one passes away, and it makes sense logically, the better the return on the insurance. So if you were to put in, you know, if you were to buy an insurance policy today and put in $10,000 and that policy was $1 million and you passed away tomorrow, you would have put in $10,000 and made $1 million for your estate. If 5 years pass and you've put $50,000 in that policy and the death benefit is $1 million, well, you've still got a great rate of return, but it's not quite as good because you've actually put $50,000 in. So the earlier one passes away, life insurance works better because it provides, it's a, you know, when you get your money sooner, that increases the rate of return regardless of the dollars in. And so if one passes away earlier, then the strategy works even better.
Okay. So switching gears, are there insurance solutions for retirees which can be useful to efficiently get money out of corporations while still alive?
So there are. There's a couple ways to handle this. One is that we can look at leverage strategies, and I'll mention a couple just for simplicity. So you are able to borrow. So if you take out a whole life policy, and let's say you had it for 20 years and it was a $2 million policy. And let's say after 20 years, the cash surrender value was $1 million. You could borrow from that $1 million. Now you could take that policy, that $2 million policy to a bank, and they will give you a loan, generally as much as 95% loan to value. And you could then borrow against that policy as collateral, completely tax-free. So the idea is that you can borrow kind of an amount annual against that $1 million cash value. You might borrow, you know, $40,000 a year, and you would essentially pay the interest on that loan every year, but you can borrow the interest, and that effectively capitalizes your loan. Now, what's interesting is that if you're incorporated, you can actually borrow, you can take a personal loan against a corporate-owned policy. And what's really interesting about that strategy is that you're using corporate dollars, retained earnings, to invest in the policy without having to pull them out and pay tax on them. But you're able to utilize that money personally on corporate dollars. Now, there is a catch to that, because technically the company is providing a taxable benefit to you as the individual borrower, because they're essentially a guarantor on the loan. So there is something you have to do to make this all kosher, and that would be that you would pay your corporation a guarantor fee. Generally speaking, a 2% guarantor fee might hold up, and obviously one can get one can try to get a decision from CRA on this, but generally speaking, if you pay your corporation a guarantor fee of say 2% of the loan value per year, that should make that arrangement kosher, and effectively when you pass away, that loan would the death benefit less the loan would come out of the corporation tax free. A second strategy for being able to access insurance benefits through retirement versus when you pass away within a corporation would be to utilize insurance on a parent. And by doing this, you're able to say, if you're, 50 years old and you have a parent who's 75 and they're healthy, you might be able to insure them so that 15 to 20 years from now, you can realize a death benefit and a capital dividend from your corporation when you're 65 years old and at retirement age. And so from a retirement planning perspective, insurance could be very powerful if utilized this way. And the rate of return, the effective rate of return of a strategy like this is off the charts. It's generally equivalent to generating, 15% a year, which most people can never do.
So we know that the only certainties in life are death and taxes. And one of the points that you mentioned as a really big benefit of insurance was covering off future tax liabilities. Can you maybe elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, when we look at estate planning, insurance being used for estate planning, we generally look at it as an alternate asset class. And when we're doing holistic planning, we would look at the overall situation. So we would look at a baseline scenario. What is the tax liability at an expected mortality? And then we would then look at what we can do to curb those tax liabilities. So generally speaking, by implementing an insurance plan and comparing it back to the baseline plan, we're able to kind of see how the total tax liabilities line up in each scenario. So, there are situations, say you have a corporation that owns an apartment building and you don't want your kids to have to sell that apartment building, and there's going to be a hefty tax bill down the road. In a case like that, you would plan for the tax bill. So you might, plan for a tax bill of $5 million, and you would then make sure that there was enough insurance using, part of the income stream coming from that apartment building inside the corporation. You'd make sure that there's enough insurance to cover off that personal tax bill, and knowing that that death benefit will come out of the corporation tax-free, even though the corporation's paying for that insurance using, corporate dollars versus after-tax personal dollars, the death benefit will still come out to you personally and allow your estate to pay that tax bill. So depending on the situation, we would always try and either target a specific tax liability or just simply reduce the taxes that you would otherwise pay if you didn't implement a solution.
And one item we haven't discussed in the role of insurance and proper estate planning is the role of charitable giving. Now, often sometimes people have the goal of having some kind of charitable solution worked into their estate plan. Can you share any real life examples with how your solutions have helped maximize someone's legacy?
Absolutely. Charitable giving is a very important aspect of what we do. There are many people that don't don't know that they have the ability to give. And we actually have the calculator on our website that allows people to assess how much they might be able to give to charity. Because it really is a critically important thing that Canadians understand the wealth that they do have and they will have and their ability to give. So some strategies are very interesting. I do have clients that don't have, some that don't have children, and they know that ultimately their money is going to go mostly to charity. And in those cases, they like to know, what can I do today? You know, and they might have 30 or 40 years left of life expectancy. What can they do today to reduce their tax bill, but also give a very large legacy to their favorite charities? Now, you can give every year to your charities. That's great. But let's say you want to leave a very meaningful gift down the road for an endowment. You know, instead of giving $10,000 a year, you might want to give $1 million. And or you might want to do both or a combination of the two. So if you this is an individual, not a corporation, and obviously there's some corporate planning we can do around this as well. But if you were an individual and you wanted to you know, purchase a life insurance policy that will generate a very large endowment for a charity in the future, you can actually get a charitable receipt for the premiums each year that you put into the policy. And so for individuals that have, you know, 30 or 40 years left to go, this is very meaningful because they're able to reduce their annual tax bills while still ensuring that they're leaving a very large legacy to charity in the future. Now this type of giving is very important because there is another way to donate insurance, and that is to just donate on your death. But if you do this, the death benefit becomes a full tax credit on your terminal tax return. The problem is many people don't have a significant tax liability on death. And so a lot of that tax receipt gets wasted. So by doing it the first way I mentioned, which is getting a tax receipt each year for your premium, it's far more effective, not to mention that you get the tax benefits starting from today versus way down the road. And you could benefit from that by, you know, being able to spend a little more every year of the money that you recover in tax savings. And also, many charities rely on these long-term endowments because for some of the larger charities, they have more money than they need on an annual basis, and they want to plan, you know, 20, 30, 40 years down the road, and these endowment gifts allow them to do that.
Certainly really powerful. Is there any advice, as a final question, is there any advice that you would give someone listening as to things to watch out for or how to determine what's best for them?
Well, I think the best way to determine what's best for you is to really intimately understand your financial circumstances. And for many people that are engaged in running a very successful business, they don't really gear the time to do this. And our firm has built its 20-year history on doing just that for our clients. So I would say that if you want to determine what's best for you, try and get a couple of opinions. And one of those opinions might be from your accountant. One of those opinions might be from a firm like ours that will do a very detailed holistic financial plan to give you an idea of where you stand. And then from there, you can proceed with strategies to improve the future or help you realize your goals sooner.
Thank you again for joining me, Asher. This has been a really great discussion, and I hope anyone listening will reach out should they have additional questions. We always advise speaking with a licensed insurance professional before making these decisions on your own. Thank you.
You're very welcome.